Good afternoon. I'm Bill Wolfson, and this is It's the Law. I'll be pinch hitting today for Patricia Garrity Smith, who is on a conference call with a judge and another lawyer. And today we're going to talk about a number of topics until Pat shows up, and then we'll be going into the sports show. But let's talk about the weather and how things are going to shape up this weekend. As you can tell, if you look outside, it's cloudy, about 41 degrees. Right over in Somerville at the airport, it's 43 degrees, overcast, and tonight we've got a slight chance of rain. Saturday, again, a 20% chance of rain. Saturday night, we're going to see a wintry mix, and it's going to get down into the upper 20s. Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday, a slight chance of snow before 8 in the morning. I'll be heading to the gym in that slight chance of snow. Partly sunny with a high near 45, and then a light west wind increasing 5 to 10 miles an hour in the morning, and a chance of precipitation of 20%. Super Bowl evening, partly cloudy, low around 34, west winds about 8 miles an hour. Sunny on Monday with a high near 56. Hey, it's going to be February 2 and nice and warm. Maybe the groundhog will have seen his shadow. Tuesday, there's a chance of rain and a high again. Of about 56 and mostly cloudy. Thursday night, again, another shot at rain and mostly cloudy with a low of around 42. Wednesday, rain likely, mainly after 2 o'clock, and it'll be in the 50s. Wednesday night, more rain and down to the 30s, mid-30s with a 60% chance of rain. Thursday, high near 47. And Friday, high near 48. So maybe the groundhog is going to see his shadow. Maybe winter's going to end. Maybe we'll see the last of old man winter, although I kind of doubt it with the weather being so different this year. So let's play a few spots, and then we're going to talk some law.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
And we're back. I'm Bill Wolfson. As you know, I'm an attorney here in Flemington. I practice statewide. And a lot of my practice is in debtor-creditor work, foreclosure work, and my favorite subject, bankruptcy. I want to talk about what happens and what can happen when somebody who has filed a bankruptcy case suddenly becomes mentally incompetent. First of all, did you know that you can file a bankruptcy case for somebody who is a minor, meaning under the age of 18, or who is mentally incompetent? Why is that? Well, that's because our national bankruptcy rules, especially bankruptcy rule BR-1014, says you can file the case. Now, what happens if you're in the case already? Well, if you file the case for somebody who is a minor or somebody who is incompetent, you would either have to have a durable power of attorney. We'll talk about that in a minute. Letters of guardianship, or have someone appointed as what's called the next friend or the guardian ad litem, meaning the guardian for litigation purposes. A durable power of attorney is a power of attorney that is not revoked in the event someone is disabled. A power of attorney is a legal document signed by an individual giving another person power to handle his or her business, financial, medical, health, and other types of affairs and property. So it's a very powerful document. It lets someone do whatever the person who grants the power of attorney could do for themselves. Very often we see powers of attorney issued when someone is going to go on a lengthy trip or vacation, when somebody is getting a little older and may need some help. We use what's called a durable power of attorney, so it's not automatically revoked if they become disabled. We have a case right now that I took on from another attorney where the individual filed what's called a Chapter 13 bankruptcy so that he could save his home, handle some debt he owed to the IRS, and keep working. And unfortunately, he began to show the signs of dementia. And about 3 weeks ago, he was in his car up in Morris County somewhere and driving around, managed to run a couple of lights, almost sideswipe a school bus, and end up parking in a very odd place, not quite sure where. And while the police followed him, when the police came to the car, he was all, apparently from the police report, he was all happy-go-lucky, didn't have a care in the world, didn't understand why the officer was there. And so he didn't seem quite with it. So instead of giving the guy just a bunch of tickets, which of course they did, they also took him down to the police station and called his wife. Well, his wife came down, and the officer said to her, "Look, we can't let her drive anymore. Let him drive anymore. He just doesn't seem to be with it. We're going to impound his car." And the car is about a 12 or 15-year-old car. This is a gentleman who's about 80 years old, and the wife is in her 70s. And we don't think he should drive. Now, he has a valid driver's license. The car was legally registered. The car was insured. So she took him home, and she called me the next day. And she said that he had been taken to the hospital. Suddenly, she brought him home, and she said that he began not making sense. He collapsed. He seems to have had a mild stroke. He also had some problems with his heart. So the emergency responders came with an ambulance, and of course he was confused by that point. And they took him to the hospital, took him to an excellent hospital. And the doctors there examined him and said, "Ma'am, your husband is suffering from advanced dementia. He has no idea why he's in the hospital. He has no idea why he has chest pain. He thinks it's because he's of something he ate, but he hasn't eaten all day. He's confused, and he doesn't really understand anything that we're going to try to do for him. So certainly he shouldn't drive. He shouldn't leave the hospital, and he can't be by himself because he's going to need 24/7 around-the-clock care so he doesn't harm himself or harm others." And that's the story. So she called me up, and I explained to her what was going to be necessary. She is going to have to find an attorney up in Morris County who is familiar with municipal court and traffic procedures and hopefully appears in that court a lot. And hopefully that same lawyer will know enough to apply for letters of guardianship. But in the event that that doesn't happen in the next few days, I have some things I have to do. The bankruptcy rules, which are basically how we apply the law, what we do, and how we do what we're supposed to do, sets out what we need to do. When we have somebody who is in bankruptcy and they become mentally incompetent, the court gets to appoint on our request either an ex-friend or a guardian ad litem or someone else to stand in his shoes, act on his behalf, and the court also gets broad power to fashion any law, any rule, or court order that would protect him. Now, this gentleman no longer works. He lives on a pension and Social Security. His wife is, on the other hand, still working. She's a very talented, smart lady. She's works, I won't tell you where she works or what she does, but she speaks a number of languages, and she's a lovely individual. But we need to appoint someone to make decisions in his case. And because he's no longer going to be able to work, and because it's not likely he's going to be able to pay his bills, he's probably eligible for what's called a hardship discharge. What does that mean in English? A hardship discharge under Chapter 13, bankruptcy, is granted by a court when it's not likely that someone is going to be able to continue to pay their debts, number one. Number two, it's not likely they're going to be able to make their Chapter 13 payments to pay their debts. Number three, the reason why it's not likely is something that's not their fault. It's beyond their control. Now, certainly, a stroke and the beginnings of dementia are beyond all of our control. As healthy as we might want to live, as healthy as we might want to eat, exercise, take medication, listen to our doctors, unfortunately, we all have a shelf life, and we begin to deteriorate in different ways as we age. I'm 68, and I'm starting to think about that, too. So what I recommended is that we file a motion to have her appointed as his guardian ad litem or next friend, because the judge gets broad powers to do so. I simply have to document his lack of ability to attend to his own affairs. And I had her obtain a letter from a neurologist who examined him and said that he is no longer able of attending to his own affairs. So what we did is we will be drafting a what we will do this weekend, rather, is we'll be drafting some papers, which basically say to the judge and to his creditors, let's appoint his wife as his next friend or guardian ad litem. He has a number of problems. He's no longer able to care for himself or attend to his own financial or legal affairs in the doctor's opinion. And let's see where this case takes us. The other half of this is that the judge in a bankruptcy case gets to enter any order that's going to protect this gentleman from his creditors. So we want to keep the automatic stay, the injunction against collection of debt, in place. We don't want to see them lose a home. We don't want to see them have problems with the IRS suddenly garnishing her pay or trying to get into his IRA or 401k because he's living on the distributions. So what happens is this. We're going to enter that order. And then what we're going to do is we're going to move for a hardship discharge so long as I am capable of proving that he's paid more to his creditors than they would have gotten in what's called a Chapter 7 or liquidating bankruptcy, which in this case I've taken a preliminary look, and I think that that's the case. So that's sort of our fallback position at a sad time in life. Things are very, very funny in this world, and unfortunately, your life can change on a dime. And that's why it's always best to get the best advice you can once you have thought through what could happen. It's always best to plan for these things, whether it's a power of attorney, a will, guardianship for your children, if you're minors, and providing for many, many other things that you may need to do in life. It's basically the old phrase of getting your affairs in order. I always am a big believer in doing things before I have to, because I know that with my parents, with my wife's parents, We took care of those things ahead of time. We made sure that in the event they were no longer capable of caring for themselves, that we had the ability to do so. Well, what does that impose on you if you suddenly become the attorney in fact, under a power of attorney for your mom or dad, because they're not able to handle their own affairs, or maybe they just don't want to do it anymore, or maybe they're in a situation where they just need a little help, whether they live with you or not. Well, the first thing is that it imposes a duty of absolute fidelity and good faith. That means you have to make good business decisions for their benefit and not for yours. There's always a problem with what's best for mom or dad or whoever. And it's a little bit like the obligation you may have for your very young children. You hold and must care for them in the best possible way. If they have property, such as money or other things, you've got to act in their best interest and not in yours. We sometimes see people doing less than that. We're going to talk about that a little bit more and the violation of the fiduciary duty that you may have as an attorney, in fact, or as a natural guardian and for your children, or guardian for your mom or dad, and we'll do that right after this commercial break.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
And we're back, but we're going to hit that money button once again because we've got sponsors we want to keep happy.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care. At a moment's notice, Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Hunterdon Healthcare, the finest care anywhere. Well, I think we're very lucky to have a hospital like Hunterdon Medical Center and their satellite offices and facilities. It's amazing what they can do as far as the breadth and extent and quality of the services they provide. But we're talking about the law, and we're talking about what happens when you are given a document or a court order allowing you to act for somebody else. We talk about the fiduciary duty. What is that? New Jersey Superior Court and Supreme Court defined it as the highest duty of fidelity and integrity you could possibly have. Basically, what it means is that you must deal with the person, other person's assets and their physical person in their best interest and not in yours and not in anybody else's. And people can get in trouble if they don't. Let's talk about what that means. Let's say you have an elderly parent who is able to care for themselves but needs some help with handling their money, dealing with their bills and expenses. So you sit down with them, and when it comes time to pay mom or dad's bills every month, you sit down with them and their checkbook, and you look at the electric bill and the mortgage and the gas bill and the car payment, and you write out the checks, and you have them sign them, and you mail the checks out. Well, you're spending their money on their things, perfectly, on their obligations, perfectly appropriate. It's for their benefit. And you take them shopping, and you take them to the bank, and they get some money out of the bank, and they go to the grocery store, and they you walk around the store with them, and they buy groceries, and you take their money and pay for their groceries, take them home, and put them on the shelf or in the refrigerator, and maybe make them dinner occasionally, as I would do with my father before he passed many years ago. Perfectly appropriate. But what happens when mom or dad moves in with you? Do you charge them rent? Do you charge them for some of the food that they eat? Or do you just suck it up, absorb the cost because they're your parents, and you pay the bills? And then what happens when your brother or sister starts to ask questions about what you're doing with mom or dad's money? That's where it can get a little sticky. The guy with the most expert on those kinds of issues, unfortunately, isn't here, and that's John Manfreda, who has a tremendous amount of expertise in this over at Gebhardt and Kiefer. So let's talk a little bit more about what can happen. And I'll tell you a story. The name of the case is called Buttermore. And there is a lady by the name of Carol Buttermore who had an elderly mother, and the elderly mother had about $700,000 in her bank account. Her mom had sold the house. She had some pension money. She had worked all her life. Plus, she had a husband who passed on and left her some money. And Mrs. Buttermore took her mom into the house. And for 5 or 6 years, she would pay mom's bills. Things would go pretty well, it seemed. What Mrs. Buttermore's mom didn't know was that Mrs. Buttermore had a boyfriend. And she gave the boyfriend a lot of money, which he allegedly used to invest to make a movie about somebody called Mary Alonzo. I have no idea who Mary Alonzo was. I had to look it up in the internet, Wikipedia. Apparently, he was a singer who grew up in New York and sang in the 50s and the 60s. So it shows what I know. Definitely not my generation. I'm more of a Bob Dylan, Grateful Dead, and Madonna kind of guy, and occasionally a Lady Gaga aficionado. But don't hold that against me, folks. You know, I've done a lot worse. Moving back to Mrs. Buttermore, Mrs. Buttermore, the daughter, had also used her mother's money to go to Atlantic City, gambling, take some vacations where she didn't take mom with her. And things went along swimmingly until one of the other children, I think a couple of brothers, sat down with Carol Buttermore and said, "Sis, what's going on here?" And Mrs. Buttermore looked her brothers in the eye and said, I need my inheritance up front." Well, you can't do that without mom's consent. You can't do that with when you're an attorney in fact and you've got a power of attorney, or you've got joint check signing privileges because mom's put your name on her account, her checking account, so that you can sign checks on mom's behalf if she's not feeling well enough or can't figure out what she's really doing. So what happens? The brothers decide that their sister is stealing from mom. She's cheating mom, even though she was caring for mom for many years, and mom was living in her house. So what happens? They hired a lawyer, and they filed a lawsuit in what's called the Superior Court Chancery Division Probate Part. Now, that's a section of the court where we have specialized judges that deal with such things as wills, estates. They deal with when somebody has to act on somebody else's behalf because they're too old or too young or they no longer have the mental or emotional ability to care for themselves, when they've been determined to be mentally incompetent. Now, and the same rules basically apply if somebody is under the age of 18. You can be under the age of 18 and be perfectly mentally competent and very sharp and very smart, but the law is the law, and it says that somebody who is under the age of 18, a minor, can't sign contracts, so somebody else has to do it for them, and the natural person to do it, take care of those kinds of things, is their mom or dad. Parents are considered to be natural guardians for their minor children. And very often, you'll see a parent open a bank account for a child under what used to be called the Uniform Gift to Minors Act, but has another name now, and which escapes me. And they will basically put in the child's birthday money or gift money or Christmas money, or maybe they have a job mowing lawns or waitressing or something like that. And it's the kid's money. And maybe they use it for college or to buy a car or to go on a trip or something, but it's for the kid's benefit and not for mom and dad's benefit. Parents don't own their child's wages or earnings. So, moving along and back to Mrs. Buttermore and her troubles. So, they go into the probate part of the Superior Court, and there's a complaint filed, which is the beginning of a lawsuit, and Mrs. Buttermore files an answer saying whatever I did was right, and Mrs. Buttermore and her lawyer don't like the way the case is going. It's not going well at all. So what happens is that Mrs. Buttermore decides she's going to file a Chapter 7 bankruptcy and discharge the debt, get the automatic stay in place, which is the injunction against collection of a debt or the prosecution of any lawsuit against you while you're in bankruptcy. So what happens? Stay tuned, and we're going to talk about this right after the news break. Hey, I'm back. It's Bill Wolfson. Let's talk about the weather. It's overcast. It's 43 degrees right here in Hunterdon County in beautiful downtown Flemington. We have a slight chance of rain tonight and tomorrow with a high of in the 40s and lows in the 20s. Saturday night, we have a slight chance of a wintry mix, 20% chance. And again, temperatures down around 29. Sunday, partially sunny. It looks like the groundhog might just see his shadow. And a high of 43, and Sunday night, a low, partly cloudy, 34 degrees is going to be the low, and Monday, sunny, Tuesday, slight chance of rain, and actually slight chance of rain the rest of the week, pretty likely we're going to not see the sun for a while, but it's going to stay above freezing, and in the 40s and 50s, so perhaps the groundhog's going to come out on Monday, when it's going to be sunny, see his shadow, and it's going to warm up, and we're done with winter. Let's hope so. I like winter. I like winter sports. I like it when it's snowy, and I get to go out and play in the snow, whether it's cross-country skiing or a little bit of ice skating or snowshoeing or just hiking. And hopefully we can get out and enjoy some of those Hunterdon County hiking trails this time of year. It's always fun to get outdoors, get the fresh air, get the sunshine. Remember, there's something called seasonal affective disorder. When I see a lot of cloudy, cold, icy days, but it affects my mood as I think it does a lot of other people. So I like to get out in the fresh air and sunshine and go for a nice long hike. 2-3 miles is usually my limit, or get some exercise some other way. We can't just live in the dark and go to and from our jobs. You'll notice, folks, the days are getting longer by about 3 minutes a day, both in the morning and the evening. That means that spring's around the corner, and I don't know about you, but I can't wait for spring. I always look forward to March 21st. Which is the vernal equinox, as they call it, and the first day of spring. But let's go back and talk more law and talk a little bit about Mrs. Buttermore and her tale of woe. So Mrs. Buttermore files a Chapter 7 bankruptcy in front of Judge Steckroth, who used to sit in Newark. He's now a retired bankruptcy judge, Donald Steckroth, very fine lawyer when he was practicing and a very good judge. And she files a bankruptcy, and no sooner does she file a bankruptcy than her two brothers and their lawyer file what's called an adversary proceeding, a complaint in bankruptcy. And what does that complaint say? It says that Mrs. Buttermore embezzled from her mother, number one. Number two, Mrs. Buttermore violated her fiduciary duty to her mother, and the basis of that fiduciary duty was that she was a caretaker and had check signing privileges. Now, ordinarily, bankruptcy judges have wrestled with the idea of what's a fiduciary duty. When the Buttermore case was decided, our U.S. Supreme Court, bankruptcy is federal, had not figured out yet, after 100 years of litigation or so, what a fiduciary duty was. But we knew that the duty had to be assumed in writing, and that there were some other requirements. Judge Steckroth found that writing in the authorization that Mrs. Buttermore's mother had given to her to sign her checks. Mrs. Buttermore was not allowed to discharge the debt she owed to her mother, who passed away during the litigation, or to her mother's estate. Now, there's no question that Mrs. Buttermore would have inherited something, but she paid herself much more than a third of what she was entitled to, the third she was entitled to, and so she had to give it back, plus pay legal fees and costs. I don't know whether they were ever paid, but the bankruptcy judge said that that was a debt that she would not be allowed to discharge because she had conducted herself in what's called a dishonest way. Under the bankruptcy code, there are certain debts that are not dischargeable, which means no matter what happens in the bankruptcy case, you still owe the money. And the way the obligations are triggered, that type of a lawsuit is triggered. In most cases, you have to file a lawsuit to have the debt determined to be non-dischargeable. In other cases, such as for alimony or child support, you don't need to do that. And because bankruptcy is so hyper-technical, it's always best to consult with an attorney to get the right guidance on this issue. I must confess, even I, after 42 years, have problems trying to decide these things, and I know judges wrestle with it also. So the unfortunate Mrs. Buttermore ends up owing the money. She can't discharge it. She's got to find a way to pay it. Perhaps she'll sell her house. She has some other money in the bank, or perhaps she still has some of Mom's money and has to give some of it back. A tough, tough thing to have to contemplate. Meanwhile, it's once again time to play a commercial or two. So let's do our public service announcements. We'll talk a little bit more about some other topics in the law.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunter Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental. NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Hunterdon Healthcare, Hunterdon Medical Center, the finest care anywhere. We're very lucky here in Hunterdon County to have such a fine institution. Moving right along, we've talked about fiduciary duties and what happens when somebody becomes mentally disabled in a bankruptcy case. We think our client is probably going to be entitled to a hardship discharge. And the unfortunate thing is he may not even understand what it is that we're trying to accomplish for him, but hopefully his wife, who is a very smart, with-it lady, will be able to do so. Moving along, let's talk about some other topics. I went to a seminar today. Lawyers in New Jersey are required to have 24 hours of continuing legal education every 2 years. And I like to go to classes. I like to go to classes where other lawyers and I get to talk about things that we've worked on, cases, rulings, how to do certain things. And because I do debtor-creditor work, today's seminar was about advanced collection practices and the bankruptcy implications of doing so. And I represent a number of landlords, and a number of my landlords sometimes have problems with tenants going bankrupt, and this is businesses going into bankruptcy. Landlords get a lot of protections provided they're in the lease and provided you are able with your commercial tenants to get what's called a security interest on their belongings so that you can protect yourself and get your rents. It's a complex subject. It's not the kind of thing for a brief radio show. If you have questions or concerns, give me a shout. I'm Bill Wolfson, and I'm usually in my office Monday, Friday, 9 to 5, in here in Flemington. Moving along, it was a great class. I always like to think that every lawyer brings something different to the law, whether it's their training, their experiences, their insights, their way of doing things. And I learned some very interesting things. For instance, we talked today about intellectual property. Now, what is intellectual property? We know that intellectual property could be something that you create. It could be anything from a picture you draw or paint, a song you write, code, the computer code that becomes software that you write. We also have intellectual property, which might be a trade secret. Might be something that your company does in a certain way or certain methods that make you money, that gives you a competitive advantage. I'm not an expert in intellectual property. We also have, as intellectual property, things called trademarks, just like the swoosh on a Nike sneaker, or the squiggle on a Coca-Cola, or the little sailboat on the Pepsi-Cola can. Additionally, there's copyright. So you can copyright a song, you can copyright a book, you can copyright a newspaper article. And apparently, I didn't know this, but you get a copyright just by being the creator of it. Just like with a trademark, you get to own the trademark by being the creator of it. You can certainly register that with a federal government office, the patent office or the trademark and copyright office. But what about some of the more recent developments in intellectual property? If you have a website, you can register it. One of the places where I register my website is GoDaddy. Another thing that you can do is you can figure out what it is that you want to do with perhaps what's called a series of videos or emails that you may post up on something called YouTube, social media. You've created your own network. You have people that log in to watch your program or what it is you do. There's a young couple right now who are sailboaters, and they are in a number of sailing magazines, but they post about their life on board their catamaran with their small child every couple of days, and I'm kind of interested in watching it because I love sailing, and I'm always interested in how people live a life aboard a sailboat, which is does not have a lot of room, and especially how they do it with a seven-month-old baby. And the program is called La Vagabond, and you can find it on YouTube. Once again, La and then Vagabond. Interesting, interesting site. And that, too, is protected under intellectual property law. The very interesting thing that happened, I thought, is that there was a young lady who was very fond of the old Addams Family TV show and the Addams Family movies. So she dressed herself up and became Adult Wednesday Addams. And she's on YouTube, and it's pretty funny if you like the Addams Family and you have a somewhat macabre or dark sense of humor, as some of my friends do. And so she would pretend to be Wednesday Addams as a grown-up, as a young woman of about 25 or 30, and the situation she got into. Well, she got a cease and desist letter from the companies that owned the Addams Family's website, the Addams Family drawings. You may remember, for those of you who are a certain age, the Addams Family was created by a cartoonist by the name of Charles Addams, and the cartoons appeared in the New Yorker probably since the late 1930s all the way up to the 70s when Charles Adams died. And they were always about the ghoulish, creepy, Halloween-type characters who were a little offbeat. And their children, and their parents, and their uncle. And there was a very funny TV show when I was a kid, and a couple of very good movies made about the Addams family, and perhaps even cartoons, for all I know. Well, this young lady got a cease and desist order because her character, the Wednesday Addams character, was the property of a Charles Addams estate and their executors and the trust that had been set up to generate money from what the characters that this man had created many, many years ago and which have since lived well past his life and are popular. People enjoy them. And I began to think about a client of mine. I have a client who is very skilled with computers, and his job, his business, is he's a very creative guy. He creates characters that he places by writing code, and he puts them into video games. And he was recently approached by a large company saying, "We like the characters that you create who shoot basketballs on the video game or shoot dragons or fight with swords or go skiing down mountains or fly around in spaceships. That's a very exciting thing, and we think that that has value. And so we'd like to hire you to help create those things so that we can make and sell video games." And they pay him a certain amount of money to do this, and they own the character. Whether it's Thor or King Kong or any of a number of other types of characters, a soldier, a sailor, a monster, what have you. That's all part of what's called intellectual property because it springs from the mind and the creativity of the person who creates it. And who owns it? If you create it, you own it, unless you sign away your rights in return for some money or something else that's valuable to your customer. And what happens is that he's now been approached by a company that wants to make movies, and it's very interesting. He has been asked to create characters who would fit into a movie script. Now, instead of cartoon characters, because graphics in the and computer-generated graphics have gotten so good, it's very hard to tell these people from who he has created images of on the screen from flesh and blood, real-life people. Now, the people that he's put together are cartoon characters. You know, they could be Superman or Batman in a comic book or a comic strip, or they could be actors or actresses. And it's interesting because when you begin to think about it, you create something that looks and acts on the screen just like a flesh and blood live person. And the rationale for a number of these companies is that, you know, we're very hungry for content to put on the internet, to stream, to put on our networks, but we're also very hungry to own these artificial creations. They do whatever the writers say they're going to do. They say whatever lines the writers are going to say. They don't get the flu. They don't wake up some morning and say, "I have a headache. I can't go to the studio and be an actor." They don't fall down and break their legs. They don't have agents that say, "I want more money for my client because my client is talented and he or she's going to make a lot of people want to go watch this movie or video or film." They don't become pregnant and have babies, so they can't swing around riding on horseback, killing dragons, or getting into sword fights. So what happens? Who owns that? And that's his job. And he's come to me and said, I don't know how to price this. I don't know what this is worth. And I don't know either because I don't do that type of legal work. But I can tell you that I know people who do. And I had a conversation with an attorney today who said to me what he ought to do is get a stream of payments called royalties each time his character is used, or to sort it out in such a way that over the years that the character is used, he gets money every month, every week, every time it's viewed, he gets a certain sum of money. Now, how do we measure that? Hard to do. We know that websites, YouTube videos get so many what I call hits, meaning somebody dials it up and watches it and looks at it. I can do that right now on my smartphone. And, there are some things I find entertaining, such as last week's Yankee game or football game or maybe a hockey game where I didn't get to watch it so I can see the highlights and then go back to work or back to what else I'm doing or let my wife watch what she wants on TV. A good way to stay married. So who knows what the where this is leading. But it's a very interesting area of the law. It shows that, technology sometimes gets far out ahead of the law, and then we as lawyers or judges or people in the legislature or Congress have to make the laws, help apply them, have to figure out how we're going to protect our clients. And just as there's a creativity in inventing a character, using your mind, say, as an example, Superman back in the late 1930s, or, the Simpsons back in the late 80s, there is a certain amount of creativity that we as attorneys have to apply and bring to the table so that we can help make our clients' lives that much better, either economically or protect their interests in these things. We're about ready to hit the 5 o'clock mark, and the law show is probably going to have to turn into the sports show in a few moments. So let's play a few more of our spots, and let's see if either Pat or John are going to visit us tonight.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise Financial Advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heide and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
Hey, we're back. I'm Bill Wolfson, pinch hitting for Pat Smith, and it's the law. And we're looking to try to figure out whether either Pat or John are going to join us for the law show. But a couple of parting shots. I was very saddened to hear, as I think other people were on Sunday, of the terrible tragedy of a helicopter crash that killed Kobe Bryant, his young daughter, and a number of his friends. It's a tough thing. We admire these people as sports figures. We know that they are, they live a very different life than we do, but unfortunately, we're all mortal and we're all subject to life turning on us on a dime and turning from something wonderful into some terrible tragedy. It is a tough thing to lose a husband and an even tougher thing to lose a child. So you have to be pretty sad, and your heart has to go out to Mrs. Bryant. I'm very interested in how people cope with those kinds of tragedies because, you know, we all will see them in our lives. So, excuse me, it is a tough thing. Well, that's the end of the law show. It's time to hear the news and weather, and we'll be back with the sports in a little while.